Heifetz, Horowitz, and Hendrix, Jimi Hendrix, that is. How virtuosity took to the stage in the age of 60s rock and roll. Listen in as Professor Michael Hicks of Brigham Young University tells us about music. This educational series, About Music, is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
A virtuoso is a term that came about in the 16th century Renaissance thing, talking about excellence or worth. And people then were talking about the greatness of an artist that was a virtuoso. But in the 17th, 18th centuries, and certainly up to the present, a virtuoso is someone who has a great deal of skill. They can play fast, they can sing high, and those sorts of things. And it actually doesn't necessarily have a positive meaning all the time anymore, because a virtuoso could be merely a virtuoso, someone who just is able to do those things but doesn't necessarily have the feeling or the passion or doesn't express the music very well. And I thought it'd be interesting with rock music to think about virtuosity and how that could be understood both in the old sense and in the new sense. Or this later sense of, you know, merely technically good. I'm picking examples here in rock music specifically from guitar and vocal, because in rock music, really, those, at least in the 1960s, were the most important things, the things that people really identified with the most. And I want to mention with guitar that once it becomes electrified, is able to become a sort of surrogate voice. It can sing, and guitars couldn't do that before. And you'll hear some very operatic guitar playing, as it were. I wanted to maybe start with an example from Woodstock. This is Alvin Lee. And you'll hear in this example that he's playing just really fast and very showy, and that's pretty much what it's all about. And I remember when we listened to this recording in 1969, we just went, wow, he's fast. He might be the fastest guitar player out there. And that was exciting in its own way. But I don't think it's terribly expressive, other than expressive of the skill of the player. Well, there's no doubt that in that example, you can hear the virtuosity in the sense of, you know, having a great deal of technical skill. And it was very exciting. And you can hear an excitement in the listeners there at the festival, too. But you get to a different kind of player, someone like Eric Clapton. And the virtuosity here is really the original sense, I think, at least, in that he is able to prolong notes when he feels that they really deserve it. And so I think that when you hear his playing, it's really like someone expressing in very eloquent prose some really deep feeling. And I think that's really closer to the original sense of virtuosity than the one that we pick up from these flashy players of the 19th century. This example from Clapton is one that's really, it's not really high fidelity, and it's not an example that most people would know. And he's just improvising here, too. And that's another part, I think, of virtuosity, is being able to create a sort of architecture of sound on the spot. It's something that we certainly associate with jazz playing, great jazz playing. I think, really, in this musical example, you can hear him telling a story. this next example is really a special case because this is from Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, if you talk to guitar players nowadays, at least rock guitar players, they will almost universally cite Jimi Hendrix as the greatest guitar player of all time. Hendrix did have some unique properties to his playing, and some of those grow out of the technology of the guitar itself. For example, one new thing in the guitars of the time, the Fender guitars at least, and that was the so-called whammy bar, this arm attached to the bridge of the instrument that you could press on, and it would move the bridge and thus lower the strings. And so Hendrix got this technique of using that whammy bar. It actually later became known typically as a Jimmy bar after him. But he would take a whole chord, and you'll hear that in this example in the latter part of the song, that he'll play this chord and then have this long portamento down with that. So the technology, in that case, of the guitar enables a new aspect to virtuosity. And also, he began to play with things that were inadvertent in the sound, like you think about feedback, something we've all heard and become accustomed to. He thought, that's a nice tone. How can I learn how to control that and weave that into my playing? Another thing is, in his case, physiology. He had extremely large hands and long thumbs. And this sort of led him to play with the thumb around the neck rather than just behind the neck. And so you'll hear in this example, right at the very beginning, that he is able to make the guitar sound like a group. Now, here I'm playing the whole song, Little Wing, and I'll just mention to you that the opening of Little Wing was sort of the litmus test for guitarists in the late 60s. If you could play the opening to Little Wing, you really were a fantastic guitarist. So it was something that everybody was trying to learn how to play it. And a lot of people just couldn't figure out how it could be done. But that's part of the unique playing style of Hendrix. Well, the next type of virtuosity with lead guitar that I want to mention, just play a little example, would be what I call the heroic style. It's kind of a Wagnerian operatic style where it's really just about letting the instrument sing as long notes as it can and with a tone that is a very rich sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but a great heroic tenor kind of sound. And you hear that in this. By the way, it's very clear when Jeff Beck plays this song with the title Beck's Bolero that he's thinking of classical references and of having a kind of classical notion of style in the song. And you'll hear it. It's a bolero rhythm behind the scenes, which we'll actually hear later in another song, too. They were quite interested in this. And this is just probably the most blatant example of a singing guitar, but singing in a very operatic, heroic aria style. I think that example is maybe a good place to turn to the voice itself in rock of the 60s. And there's probably no better place to start than with Roy Orbison. And this is early 60s, this is 1964. And Roy Orbison was thought to be, by most other rock aficionados, or other rock singers, I should say, as a kind of opera star of rock. And you'll hear this in this. He's got this high tenor voice, the long sustain, the fine vibrato. And so it's virtuosity in a very traditional sense. But he's singing like Jeff Beck's guitar was being played in that previous example. And so just listen to Roy Orbison, again, in a sort of conventional, classical almost style in this recording of It's Over.
And say goodbye. You won't be seeing rainbows anymore. Setting suns before they fall. Echo to you, that's all, that's all. But you'll see lonely sunsets.
Orbison is not really a model for rock singers, that's for sure. But there are other singers of the 1960s who had a lot of chops, a lot of vocal chops, we'd say. They had powerful voices. They were able to sustain tone. They had great sense of pitch. Some of them were more ornamented, you might say, and had more mannerisms, and they liked to play with the vowels and play with the sounds. And this is really kind of a jazzier technique, more than a classical technique, of course. And you can hear this in this example, for example, from Van Morrison. He's a kind of Baroque singer, you might say. He's very ornamented, lots of embellishments. and quite improvisatory, as you'll hear. And he also has, you have to say, this buzzing sound of rock singers, that sound that really is a part of rock that comes originally from, I think, the sound of distorted guitars. Let's listen to Van Morrison in this one and listen for the melismas. He's kind of what I would think of as the equivalent of Eric Clapton. When he's singing, he tells a story through the singing in the way that Eric Clapton does with his guitar playing.
You know the doctor barking, way out on the damp and studded highway where you wander, and you roam from your retreat and view. Tomorrow while the tipping tracks will unload together, every scrapbook stuck with glue, and I'll stand beside you. To never, never, never wonder why at all. No, 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 no. To never, never wonder why at all. To never, never, never wonder why it's gotta be. It has to be.
I love that. I love Van Morrison, so probably, you know, my bias is showing and including that example. Now we go in a slightly different direction here. And here we're dealing with vocalists, yes, but people who would say, I really can't sing. So the question is, how do you create a virtuosity that is not based on traditional notions of what it would be? And in Mick Jagger's case, and by the way, I should say, Mick Jagger is, without question, the most influential vocalist of the 1960s and probably of the whole rock era, with a close second being Bob Dylan, whom we'll hear from in a bit. But Jagger realized, I think, that without the vocal chops that so many others had had before him, he was going to have to think in a different way. And what he did was think about the microphone as an instrument. And this was something that a lot of, for example, African-American preachers had learned very well and were able to come in really close to the mic and get in, and you get kind of an intimate sound when you get close to the mic. So even though you're no closer physically to the listener, through the microphone you can get a kind of intimate connection with them. And by the same token, you can get way back and you can kind of shout like that. Well, what you'll hear in this Mick Jagger example, this is from the song Paint It Black, 1966, a sitar playing, and he's singing in unison with the sitar, and he's singing in a very relaxed way, very close mic'd. And then it switches to a rhythm guitar being featured with a kind of distorted sound, and he backs off of the mic and sings like that. And so he's kind of paralleling the different instruments. And then in the last part of this excerpt, he kind of goes into a mediation between the two, so a kind of moderate voice. But you'll hear him, in other words, trying to compensate, in effect, for his lack of vocal chops by using the microphone in a very skillful way.
I see a line of cars and they are painted black. Flowers and my love hope never to come back. I've seen people turn their heads and quickly look away. Like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it painted black. Yeah. or turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun,
well, I mentioned Bob Dylan earlier, and we're going to end with Bob Dylan, who invented his own kind of virtuosity. Now, Dylan was a poet, and he was really going back to the roots of vocal music in doing sort of recitations in a way. He has certain distinctive traits that are virtuosic in themselves. For example, he uses Sprechstimme, that's the technique that we associate with Arnold Schoenberg, which is a kind of in-between singing and speaking. And he was a master of this, so he could sort of move in and out of the spoken and the singing voice, the pitched voice and the not-so-pitched voice. And he decided to focus on that as a way of expressing his poetry. But the thing that maybe is the most enduring virtuosic quality is the way in which he's able to deliver his words with very distinctive, complex rhythms. And he saw how that needed to be brought into the delivery of lyrics. And he actually writes lines that are very unequal in length, so that in the course of, say, two measures, he might have in one instance 5 syllables and another instance 15 syllables. This particular song I picked because this was a song that was a favorite of Leonard Bernstein when he was talking about rock music. This is the song Ballad of a Thin Man. It's from 1965. And the chorus, as you'll hear, is "Something is happening, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones?" And Bernstein thought that was such an ominous lyric, and it was so clearly reaching into our psyches and saying, something is happening, musically and otherwise, culturally, and you don't know what it is. And Bernstein said, you know who he's talking about when he says you. It's us. It's all of us. And so that's one of the great, you might say, insinuations in this song. And it really got to even cultural icons like Leonard Bernstein, who heard something new in it, in the delivery of the lyrics, and a kind of virtuosity, again, a very personal virtuosity with Dylan.
You have many contacts among the lumberjacks to get you facts when someone attacks your imagination. But nobody has any respect anyway. They already expect you to all give a check to tax-deductible charity organizations. The professors and they've all liked your looks. With great lawyers you have discussed lepers and crooks. You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, it's well known. But something is happening here and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? Well, the sword swallower, he comes up to you and then he kneels. He crosses himself and then he clicks his high heels. And without further notice, he asks you how it feels. And he says, here is your throat back, thanks for the loan. And you know something is happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
In Dylan's delivery, clearly you can hear the roots of rap and hip-hop and all of these styles that are really based on that speech song. But I must say that none of them nowadays can do it as well as Dylan did it even then. The point that I think I'm trying to make with all of these things, and by talking about virtuosity in a seemingly paradoxical way in 60s rock, is that this idea of what is virtuoso is something that every generation has to reinvent for itself. And every individual artist sometimes has to figure out and reinvent for himself or herself. And that's, I think, one of the beauties of the very notion of virtuosity. Whatever it is, it's excellent, it's exceptional skill, but it's also very personal and it's very idiosyncratic. And yet, for someone, it's thrilling. And that's what virtuosity is all about.
About Music, an educational series produced by BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education. Thanks to special guest Michael Hicks of Brigham Young University for his expertise on virtuosity in 60s rock and roll. Executive producer for this series, About Music, is Walter Rudolph. Virtuosity in 60s Rock and Roll was produced by Bruce Seeley. To find out more about this series, our guest, and the music you heard in this program, visit our website at kbyufm.org. Thank you for joining us to learn more about music.